You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
For today, we have a briefing on one of the key issues that we started doing briefings on 17 years ago. It still goes on. It's really important for a variety of different stakeholders in the space. And we usually have a really good, vigorous, collegial discussion on the topic. It's collecting online sales taxes. Should Congress weigh in? We'll have a moderator orient you to the issue, and then we'll get into the debate. My moderator today is Barbara Cleveland, who's a member of my board of directors. And my board is designed to ensure that we play it fair and balanced on everything we do. It's ideologically balanced. It's balanced with regard to different sides of the aisle and between public interest, academics, and corporations. So let me introduce Bartlett Cleveland, who is the director of the Center for Technology Freedom at the Institute for Policy Innovation, and he's going to be your moderator for today. Bartlett.
Thank you, Tim. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to do my very best to not take my time for 5 years, although I've been about this issue for 15 years. I'm going back to the legislation since then, held various things. I think we are today talking about specific indirect sales tax. If you want to know
Bartlett. I'm Brian Barron with eBay. And eBay's position on this legislation is that no small businesses that use the Internet should become subject to tax enforcement from 45 different states. That the tax enforcement issue is really the most important issue at hand, and we can walk through real quickly why that is. First of all, I would agree with Emmett that there is there's no effort to create a new Internet sales tax on consumers. At the same time, it's important to note that there's also no such thing as an Internet loophole of any kind that would be closed. The reality is that current law predates the Internet by decades when it comes to sales tax collection obligations. The Internet, retail over the Internet, is not treated today any differently than catalog retail or actually store retail. And, in fact, the way that the retail market is going really proves that out. What this is about is the fact that states today absolutely have the power to force any retailer with a presence in their state to collect sales taxes. They also have the power to require every citizen in their state to pay their use taxes. States also have the power to give tax breaks to the businesses that are located in their state, and they often do that. What this bill is about is giving states a power that they have wanted for many, many decades, and that is the power to enforce their sales tax laws on businesses that are far away. They don't have that power. The Supreme Court has turned that down a couple of times, and this is an effort to use the Internet as the reason to give them a power that they've wanted for many decades. And by the way, there is a technical and important distinction between sales taxes and use taxes. This is not a use tax collection bill. This is a sales tax bill. And businesses owe sales taxes. Consumers owe use taxes. When states enforce their sales tax law, it's the business that's required to pay. So like I said, this is about tax enforcement, sales tax enforcement in the Internet age. Today, states can only require businesses with a presence to collect these. They want to get this power on out-of-state businesses. Again, tax enforcement, on one hand, it sounds kind of boring, not nearly as invigorating as Internet sales taxes, Internet taxes. But the reality is that if you ask people what they think about expanding the power of states to collect their taxes and giving states the power to enforce their tax laws on out-of-state businesses, they are actually more opposed than they are on the general idea of taxes. And in some ways, that's not surprising. We all pay sales taxes at times when we shop on the Internet. All of the largest retailers in America, they're all big Internet players. They all have presence in many states. There's a lot of sales taxes being collected already. But people are concerned about the prospect that what you're going to do is empower states to enforce laws outside their borders. And that really, I think, is the issue that's most relevant to the Internet caucus. How does the Internet interact with the idea of how powerful governments are? So this is about the enforcers of tax laws and giving them a new power. I just sort of hinted at, but one of the other points I wanted to make sure everybody was clear about was that every retail business in the U.S., every retail business model involves technology. You know, the giant largest retailers in America are all using the web and mobile. Small businesses, by and large, who are in retail are using the Internet and mobile. Just like every business uses technology, every retail business has a facility. You have to have a place to keep your stuff. Now, it can be facilities in 20 states or 50 states or one state. The reality is that small businesses tend to just be in one state because they're small. But everybody has their presence somewhere. Every retailer, no matter how they're communicating or dealing with their customers, they're creating jobs somewhere. They're all paying taxes somewhere. It's completely disingenuous to describe retail in 2013 as the Internet versus Main Street. All the biggest stores on Main Street are all big Internet players, and all the smallest stores on Main Street all have a web presence. So if we could at least stop that, I think that would be a step forward. Now, one other thing is that, of course, all of those retailers, big or small, whether they primarily sell through stores or they primarily sell through the Internet or mobile or Facebook, everybody is living under the same laws, and those laws have been in place, as I said, for many, many decades.
So all the investment decisions, all the business decisions by retail, they've all been made fully understanding the tax consequences. When a retailer with stores all over America combines their stores with their websites and they take on tax burdens, they understand why. They understand that it's a benefit to do it anyways. When a business puts a distribution center into a state and that's supposed to come with tax obligations, they understand that. That's not a surprise. So the key here is that this is an effort to change the law in a way that most undermines the businesses that have the least amount of physical presence. One last point I want to make before I sort of summarize, and that is we've never at eBay said that the problem with these proposals is that things are too complex or that compliance is the problem. We said it's a bad idea. It negatively impacts the retailers with the smallest amount of presence. We would note on this issue of are we going to protect small business retailers who are using the internet, that over the years, and as Tim mentioned, this thing goes back to, well, the issue predates the internet, and the issue with the internet starts on day one, that the bills have actually gotten worse over the years for how they're going to protect smaller retailers. That the bill that came out of the organizations that support this a decade ago used to, for example, have a $5 million small business exemption. The bills today are down to wondered, did businesses actually get smaller, or is big now smaller than it used to be? I don't know. It's hard to say other than the fact that more retailers would be covered. And those small retailers, they're not just competitors today of the largest retailers, which they are, but actually these are the businesses that theoretically will grow into the large retailers of tomorrow. You know, another giant retailer. Now, we at eBay are like, that's great. We will help many of them grow into giant retailers. I think there are some folks in this debate who prefer that they don't. So what are the internet issues? They're issues like, how is due process interact with the internet? How is the government, how do we define the power of government in a world where commerce crosses borders so easily? How do we deal with state power? Because it's not the power to collect taxes. Some states would look at it as the power to defend their businesses from other states' tax collectors. And how do you deal with taxation without representation? At the end of the day, these are businesses who do not have representation in the states that they're going to have to live under their laws. So these are the issues that I hope that we're talking about in that context, not just in the U.S., but the fact is that these are going to be global issues related to the internet, because the internet is such a global issue.
Thank you. Chase Bartlett, Steve Del Bianco, I'm executive director for NetChoice, trade association for e-commerce platforms and online businesses, companies like AOL, eBay, Facebook, Expedia, Yahoo, several thousand small e-commerce sellers. And I'm also today representing a coalition we're part of called TrueSimplification.org, or Trust. And I'm joined there by American Catalog Mailers, the Direct Marketing Association, and the Electronic Retailer Association. So if simplification truly was a worthy aspiration 10 years ago, that's when I began attending every single one of the streamlined sales tax project meetings. We really did want to simplify what the states were doing at the time and address the complexities that the Supreme Court found in the Gilbert. But you know, we're not nearly there. I think that's obvious if you compare this Marketplace Fairness Act to the minimum simplifications that we all set out to do. There was a handout on the table that starts with trust, and it lists 12 minimum simplifications. We all agreed for the aspiration. And then we score the Marketplace Fairness Act against it. And of the 12, there's one yes, there's two yes buts, and there's nine big fat no's. I hope during Q&A, Bartlett, we'll have a chance to dive into the details of where the Marketplace Fairness Act is not nearly simple enough to deserve congressional endorsement to blow away the physical presence standard that's worked so well since the 1960s. But I'll tell you, in the Senate today, they will do a resolution to the budget, a resolution that would give some vague and vacuous statement in support of the principles that Bill and Emmett have talked about, without getting into any of the details. And I think it's because the Senate would prefer not to put this Marketplace Fairness Bill under the daylight of a committee hearing, or God forget, a markup where we actually get to ask whether it's simple enough to deserve turning over the bull case. So does that mean it's inevitable? I mean, after all, you've heard that the constitutional restraint on the state taxing powers is a loophole. That's amazing that the Constitution is actually the loophole to worry about. You've heard, number two, that it's free and easy. It's completely free to do 46 states and 10,000 jurisdictions. After all, software makes it trivial. And the third thing you've heard is that the internet is kind of a virus that's crushing Main Street retailers. But I think if you look hard at it, you won't come to those three conclusions so fast, because it's not nearly that simple. First thing I'd say to you is that this commerce clause that the Supreme Court set up is done as part of the organization of our country. The Founding Fathers knew that the 13 colonies were notorious at erecting trade barriers, tariffs, and duties to penalize businesses in other states in favor of their own. That's why Article 1 of the Constitution says that states can't erect barriers, can't impose their taxes and duties on businesses across state lines. Now, the Streamlined Sales Tax Project was supposed to be a response to the Bill case. But after a decade of trying, it was moving very slowly. It's very hard work. And I think that what happened is that Bill and his members, some of the big stores, they lost patience. They were so desperate to force Emmett and Amazon to start collecting sales tax in the places that they said, let's forget what the real simplification was supporting. And let's just give these state tax collectors the powers they seek, whether it's simple or not. Today, even Emmett and Amazon support it because, well, frankly, by the end of this year, Amazon will already be collecting for over 50% of the U.S. population under current law. Why is that? Because they're doing a fabulous job rolling out distribution centers that make them have to collect in more and more states. And therefore, there is no need to change the law to get Amazon to collect. And yet, I think at this point, Amazon says, well, yeah, we'll take a little bit of simplification, particularly if it forces other competitors to have to collect. Now, think about where this is going, because there are businesses in each of your states. Your constituents are the kind of businesses this would affect, because they serve customers all over the country. Forget the internet. Think about catalog businesses. We've got a catalog here from Healthy Living. The average customer in this catalog is 70 years old. 40% of them paid by writing a check, filling out that little card inside. And the card says, of course, if you're a resident of Ohio or New Jersey, so I asked the owners of this company, so what would that little one-page insert look like about sales tax? You had to include all the jurisdictions across the United States so Grandma could figure out her sales tax. But the size of the insert is bigger than the company. How could it possibly be that catalog customers are going to be, and some of these customers in your district, some of the catalog companies as well, can't be done. And the thing is, once we move this legislation with the Senate, losses it over today, and God forbid the House moves it, It's going to affect businesses in your state. And when they complain to you, they're your boss. What have you gotten us into? Frankly, your problems. You can't get them out. Because what this bill does is allows no states can choose whether they want to collect your taxes. Businesses in your districts, they have no choice whatsoever about whether they have got to pay the taxes. There's no opt-in. This is a mandate on every business in every state, even states that don't have a sales tax of their own. And I think that's why you really have to take a step back, look at the simplifications, because it's a point of no return that's promised. And I think that I'm going to close it by saying that this shows that the internet, frankly, is serving businesses in all of your states. They all use it today to buy and sell and reach customers. The internet is not some virus that came from outer space. In fact, in the United States, we invented the internet. It's in every single town. And I think it's wrong to think that the internet is unfair, it's an enemy. It's like that Pogo comic in the 70s that said, we've met the internet. It is all of us. It's not simply.
So hang around, and we'll get an answer. All right, I think instead of asking, but first of all, are people terminating questions out there? I've got one that I want to do. Are they going to be okay? Everybody. So here's what I want to do first. First, I'm going to stick with my covenant. I'm going to prepare for response to the attack on what I wrote. So I'm going to honor my covenant. Brian has suggested there's been some things that someone asked.
Comments and things were attributed to Uber were factually inaccurate. So I'll just quickly run through some of them. One of the ones is there was some aspersion made that we're like hiding the number of people that sell on our site, hiding the number of $1 million sellers that are out there. And I think that probably reflects maybe a lack of knowledge about how internet retail works these days rather than like accusing us of lying. The reason why eBay nor any other website knows how many people are doing more than $1 million business is that small businesses that use the internet don't just sell on one site. Like none of our larger sellers just sell on eBay. All of our larger sellers sell on multiple platforms. Once you're big enough, $1 million, which as we've heard is a huge business, and I'll give some perspective on what $1 million is in retail, but let's say it's like 1% of one Walmart store, then $1 million you're selling on your own website. Google AdWords, you're selling through social networking sites, you're selling on eBay, you're probably selling on Amazon if you want to tell them all your how your business works. So you're doing five sites right there, which is why eBay has no idea where our sellers are selling besides eBay. So we know how many we have on eBay, but that is not a reflection, and we would not want to let anybody get the idea that it's a reflection of how many businesses are impacted by any particular number. Number two, there was a reference to a column by the former administrator of the SBA, Hector Barreto, which, number one, accused us of saying that the small business exemption ought to be $30 million. Bill, you can't find that quote from anybody at eBay ever, because we've never said it ought to be at $30 million. What we've said is that if you're going to have an honest discussion of what a size standard is that separates small business from big business, there are examples out there. One of them happens to be from the SBA. They actually have an Office of Small Business Size Standards. There are actually professional federal bureaucrats who do this for a living. And there is a size standard already for something called electronic retail. So the irony is that Hector Barreto claims that the number 30 comes from brick and mortar, a brick and mortar example, when there are actually 69 retail size standards alone. One of them, size standard 45444, is electronic retail. It happens to be $30 million. I will say this, to give some perspective on a million, the smallest retail size standard, according to the SBA, is for newsstands, $7 million. So you graduate out of the Small Business Administration programs if you run newsstands at $7 million. I think that they might argue. But there's also a Treasury Department number we often reference, which is $10 million. They say if you're going to score tax bills, use $10 million as the size of every kind of business in America. That's when they go from small to big. Whatever. Our point is $1 million is tiny. Let's see, one last thing that Bill said that was actually true, but that I want to take the opportunity to reiterate, is that if you're a business and you don't collect and remit your sales taxes, you do go to jail. That's our point with small businesses. If you're a business in Virginia and you don't collect your sales taxes, Virginia can send you to jail. New York cannot send you to jail. And our concern here is that when this law is changed, that's the biggest difference, is that New York and California and Illinois and every other state will actually be able to send a small business in every other state to jail. That's a problem.
To take that off the table. So let's say Quill gives Congress the power to blow away the physical presence standard. But it doesn't mean it's the right thing for Congress to do. So that's the question in front of you. When you decide to blow away the physical presence standard and let a tax auditor from New York descend upon businesses in your state, you've got to figure out whether you really protected your businesses by adequate simplifications and an appropriate small business measure. So let me just give you, I'm a business man. I built information systems for a living. Just give you one small idea about what $1 million is like when you're a retailer. Because retailers work off of gross margin. Gross margin is the difference between what I sold it for and my cost of goods sold. When you look at the businesses that sell a lot on the internet, the gross margins are 20 to 30%. Call it 25%. What does that mean? That means on $1 million of sales, they realize maybe $250,000 of gross margin. That's what they start with. They don't start with a million, they start with 250. What do they do with that? They have to pay all their bills. That's all the money there is for a retailer. So this $1 million big business starts with 250 to pay for marketing, trade shows, travel, all of their inventory management control, their website, their accountants, advertising they do online to try to attract customers. And then, after paying all those bills, if there's anything left over, maybe there's a salary in there for one or two people. So $1 million of gross retail sales is no more than a 1 or 2 person shop. Let's just be clear about that. That may guide you a little bit to really dive into what level this needs to be. Because these are the same people that will pick up the phone and call your boss's office and say, what have you gotten me into? We don't even have a sales tax here in Montana. And yet I'm collecting for 46 states. 15 of them have just served on me an audit notice for me to show up in Albany and answer why I haven't been collecting the New York sales tax. Didn't even know I had New York customers. So think about small, and at a million in gross, it's a one or two person business.
Thank you.
legislation would authorize 46 state tax collectors and auditors to force a business to pay their privilege tax on any sale they make within that state. Now, they owe the tax. The business owes the tax, whether they collected it from the customer or not. By golly, most will do their best to pass it through to the customer right at the point of sale. If they don't, it doesn't matter. If the state auditor sends you a demand letter or an audit, you owe it whether you collected it or not. You can't say that my customer plus taxes and penalties and interest. Now, an audit risk typically shows up as a demand letter. You actually do an audit because that takes a lot of time and effort on the part of the tax collector. So what you're going to find when you talk to your constituents is that they'll occasionally fill up a letter. It's a demand letter. Albany, New York, where the tax commissioner says that our records show you made $11,000 of sales in New York last year. Please remit the 11% sales. And you're stuck. Either travel to Albany and hire a lawyer there, ignore it at your own peril. And that's the demand letters that they descend upon your business. 46 states can drop that demand letter on any business in your state the minute this becomes law. And does it, the software somehow get them out of that? Not even, because it was part of the Streamlined Sales Tax Group, which we commissioned PricewaterhouseCoopers to do a $1 billion study on what businesses in your states were spending now collect sales tax for the one or two states they already collected. They give up amazing numbers. They said $1 million a year business is spending 17 cents of its own money for every dollar they collected. 17 cents for every dollar collected. Unless you think software makes all that go away, only 2 cents out of the 17 cents. So what was the other 15 cents? Just explain. Answering questions from state auditors, answering questions from customers, handling tax-exempt sales, updating your handling problems with sales tax holidays in every jurisdiction. In other words, the heavy lifting of running a business is answering the phone and answering the mail, dealing with exceptions that come up like returns and exchanges. Software doesn't make any of that go away, but it doesn't eliminate the risk that you first highlighted, which is getting a demand letter that leads to penalties, interest, and audits.
Well, no, let me mention. And for those who don't know, it most helpful to try to get some understanding of how big $1 million is, which I think reflects and starts to point out, like, the other side is fighting like dogs to try to convince people that $1 million is a big business. Because at the end of the day, they know Congress won't want to harm small businesses. And I've found, having had to talk about this for a long time, that most folks, if you want to talk about retail and how big things are, it makes most sense to try to ask them about some retail establishments that they know. You know, like, you go into your local drugstore. Everybody goes to the drugstore. So having an idea of how much one drugstore sells might give some idea about how big of a retail business is these certain dollar amounts. So your average drugstore, your CVS, your Walgreens, they average about $8 million a year. Now, those retailers have 3,000 and 4,000 stores, but each individual store, around $8 million. So when you go into your drugstore and you try to think, what would $1 million retailer sell? Maybe they would sell the amount your drugstore sells in 6 weeks. If you go to a Best Buy, we all go to Best Buy. I can still go to Best Buy. You go to Best Buy, your store selling around $30 million. So your small online retailer who sells televisions might sell what your Best Buy, your one store. Now, they have 1,500 stores, but their one store sells $1 million in, well, what, it would be 2 weeks. Like I mentioned, Walmart. Walmart averages just under $100 million per store. To give some perspective of scale in the world of retail, Walmart sells twice as much as all of e-commerce. Twice as much as all of e-commerce. The scale difference between a business like that and $1 million, like I said, $1 million retailer sells what one Walmart store sells in 4 days. These are not big businesses. These are tiny businesses. These are 6 weeks of a drugstore businesses. Now, the software Avalara, there is absolutely software out there. Now, let's remember, these are businesses that operate under the law today. So if you're a small business, you're acquiring software to help you deal with the one state where you live. Because honestly, for a small three-person business selling $1 million, even complying with their own state is a challenge. So they'll use software for one state. Maybe they're a big business and they're in two states because they have a warehouse somewhere else. Avalara helps them with that. Now, at eBay, like I said, actually, we're a platform for all kinds of businesses. We're a platform for some really big retailers as well. They have, if they need it, software solutions that cover much larger states. Like I said, it's not about initially calculating this stuff. It's about actually complying with the law fully and who can send you to jail. And let me tell you, states like to go after small businesses. We were in a panel 2 days ago, and the folks talking about business activity taxes were talking about how small businesses in particular get targeted with these demand letters, where it becomes easier for them to send in the check than it is to try to fight the states. So if you want to deal with the real issue here, and this brings us back then to Quill. Quill was about a very large retailer. It was Quill Stationery and Pens. Most of you are probably familiar with Quill Stationery and Pens. In the world of retail, it's a meaningfully big business. It's not $1 million business. It's a relatively big business. They were aggressive. They were fully marketing into the state of North Dakota. Now, the Supreme Court had an earlier decision, the Bellis-Hess decision, which set out two constitutional problems with the state of Illinois going after out-of-state retailer National Bellis-Hess. There was a due process concern, and there was a Commerce Clause concern. And on due process and Commerce Clause, the court was very explicit in Bellis-Hess, and it said it's absolutely a violation of due process for the state to go after the out-of-state business, and it was a Commerce Clause violation as well. What happened in Quill was the court said that Quill Stationery and Pens, a pretty big business, the due process challenge was not there for Quill, because Quill was very aggressively marketing into the state of North Dakota. So they said Quill's defense couldn't rely on due process, and it could only rely on the Commerce Clause. Now, it still struck down the ability of North Dakota to do it for Commerce Clause reasons. But when you hear folks say that it's only a Commerce Clause issue, or the court was saying that Congress could change the law effectively for for really big businesses like Quill. The court was not saying that there was no such thing as due process, or that due process wasn't an important issue here. And actually, I would say that it's the internet that has made this even more important, because back in 1980, whatever it was, that they
round up the big ten.
No, I get an extra minute for every time eBay's been personally attacked. So the idea is that what in the internet, a really small business, like literally a single person, can effectively sell everywhere. A person can run a business that sells a total of $1 million or $2 million and can do it almost on their own because the margins are so small, and the internet does help you reach consumers everywhere. But if the U.S. government, if the Congress heads down the path of saying what really matters for a business having tax and regulatory obligations is where you sell to and not where you are, then in the internet age, then the internet caucus ought to care about it. That effectively means when you're up on the internet, you're following the laws, the tax laws and the regulatory laws everywhere in the world. Everybody. It means you're present everywhere. That's a really scary thing for small businesses, and that's why eBay opposes it, because at the end of the day, what are we? We're a marketplace primarily of small businesses and entrepreneurs. And one last thing. All the sellers that are not quite a million, at eBay, we hope they grow into $1 million sellers and then $10 million sellers and then $100 million sellers, and someday maybe they'll be as big as one Amazon warehouse, which would be really cool.
Okay, so we barely heard from the audience. My goal, I'm going to now be the audience advocate, so we're going to change up a little bit. Question from the audience. I'm going to give each side 2 minutes. Y'all can decide amongst yourselves who gets the answer, and that's it. And I'm just going to start asking the next question in 2 minutes over your time. Got it? All right. Over here. Thanks, Andrew. I think origin-based sourcing and the True Simplification Coalition agrees. It's a great idea. It preserves state tax competition. It lets the state look out for the businesses that are based there. I think it's a great idea. You mentioned the level playing field. You're exactly right. Today, every business, online, catalog, and offline, they all collect for every state where they have a physical presence. Already, this bill turns it all upside down and forces you to collect in places where you don't have a physical presence. And that, to me, doesn't even smell remotely like. Next question was right here. Carl will give you the URL for the Price Waterhouse study. Tim and Eric
signal to me that they'll put them both up on the ICAC website after the meeting.
Right. So that total answer just was 40 seconds. All right. The comment was that businesses can put businesses in jail if they states can put businesses in jail if they don't collect their sales taxes. Not that they want no, but Mike, what the comment was is that states can. But no, I don't think that's at all what states want to do. States want to raise tax money from out of state businesses. That's what they want to do. That's what they've always wanted to do. It's always better to raise your tax money from businesses or individuals who cannot vote for you. Which is why, actually, most all of the internet-related tax provisions that the Congress has passed, from the access tax to discussions now about the digital download tax, or the cellular tax, all these taxes, the idea is to stop states from being able to put tax burdens on businesses that don't actually have a presence in them, because that's the first place they look. So what I said was no. What states will do, and what states do, is they target out-of-state businesses, and they try to get them to pay more taxes, because if you can raise your revenue on folks who cannot vote for you, that's a better move, and that's what states do.
Okay, hang on, let me hear.
But Mike, if they don't, see, the beauty of it today is that if you're a small business in Virginia and New York says you owe them more money, then you can just ignore it, and that's what they do, because you, black and white, you don't have a presence in New York, you can ignore it. That's what gets changed by this. See, now the state can send a letter. But you can't really ignore it, because now actually that state has a power that up until now they haven't had. And the states have wanted it for many, many, many decades. So absolutely, the dynamic you're talking about is very real.
All right. Hang on, sir. Responsibly. Order. Jail rhetoric. I hope this is first. The fact is, secondly, I have a few other questions from staff. I want to give some priority to their staff with questions to pop their hands up now. And if they're not, I'll pick here and look back at the next one.
Great question. So one of my members is the Silver Gallery. It's a $3 million company that sells specialty items that are engraved silver and pewter. They're based in Virginia, but they sell to customers in all 50 states if they come to their website. but they really want to find new customers. So where do they find them? Typically on eBay and Amazon, and primarily on Amazon. So she gets customers on Amazon, and Amazon doesn't help her. They don't collect the sales tax for her, but they charge her 15% right off the top to sell on her website. She has enough sales in several states, but not enough to bother all the paperwork of figuring out exactly where it's due. So what she does today is she eats the tax. She pays the tax without having tried to figure out what's owed to that particular jurisdiction. She figures it out at the end of the quarter. She doesn't do it in real time because she's using her own custom-made shopping cart software. So in real time, she's unable to figure the right amount. She pays it at the end of the month and at the end of the quarter when she files. So they self-pay. That's the first exposure. The second exposure is them not knowing that a particular item was subject to tax. An engraved item has a bunch of service on it. So later on, you get a letter that says you owe sales tax on something for the last 2 years for everything you sold into California, but you haven't been collecting it correctly. You owe tax plus penalties and plus interest. And we can't keep saying that the answer is to go put my store on eBay and Amazon. eBay and Amazon charge me 10 to 15% off the top to sell on their store, and that wipes out my margins. And to pay Amazon or eBay to collect the tax for me means I have to put all of my sales on Amazon. And if I put all of my store on Amazon, I have just lost 15% off the top, 15 cents on every dollar I sell I give to Amazon as a referral fee. How many businesses in your districts are going to tell you that right off the top they can give up 15% because you tell them it's easy to collect, just move your store onto Amazon? That is not going to be an answer you're going to give with a straight face to members of your district.
I toss out an example of the kind of situation where software doesn't solve the problem, but a state could go after a business. So one of the provisions in the bill, and appropriately so, however the bill defines small business, like related businesses should all be counted together. That would be our view. And so, for example, but now that's always a sort of a tax compliance challenge. There are some really, really giant retailers who've been in some pretty big legal fights with states, for example, over whether or not one part of their business was actually related to the other part of their business for tax purposes. So let's say you have a small business and a state thinks that two businesses are actually one business. And they're each under, without any question, whatever becomes the eventual small business threshold. So let's say it's a really big number, not like a Dr. Evil's $1 million, but like an actual real serious small business number. The state could essentially send a letter to the business saying, we think these two businesses are actually one business. And that's not a software problem, right? Because under the bill, neither of those two businesses had to comply with the law because of the small business exemption. And even if it all goes into effect, that's the kind of thing that a state could go after businesses about. Are two businesses related? Are the products that the business is selling really taxable or not taxable? For example, there are states that used products are not subject to sales tax in the same way new products. So then you get into definitions of like how reconditioned are things, are they really new, are they really used? These are things that software has nothing to do with. This is about the real world of business and tax compliance. And right now, at the end of the day, those kind of tax compliance issues businesses face for the state or states they're in, not for all the states. And this would change that. So that's, you wanted to know why a business would not be able to have a software answer? That's an answer. They have, there are two businesses. The business says they're totally separate. The state of New York says they're actually together. I'll see you in court in New York. But when they get sued, no. But hold on. But when they get sued in the state of New York,
I just want to remind everyone: we do have another staffer with like that question. So let me just let you know. I don't disagree. But we also have about 12 minutes left. I really want to partner with the staffers. So if you guys have anything you want to say, okay. There's a staffer back here. Already said yes. Next question. Okay.
Yeah, let me say that I didn't say it was a compliance issue. I said it was an enforcement issue. That the real issue for small businesses is how many states they can face enforcement from. So it's dramatically expanding the power of states to enforce their laws on out-of-state businesses. From eBay's perspective from the beginning, that, you know, we're absolutely happy to entertain discussions of at what point, if in the Internet age, there's a point where a business, even with very limited physical presence, becomes effectively national. You know, that's actually an interesting debate to engage in. Like, how big is it when your retail business is so big that it should be treated essentially the same way that today retailers who are everywhere get treated? Because, you know, the reason why this is such a disparate bill is because if you're a retailer and you're in 50 states, there's no change. And the reality is there are a bunch of retailers who are in 50 states and they're on the Internet. And so this change is only affecting businesses that have very limited physical presence. And so maybe there is a point, and there are some, you know, retail businesses, not many, because honestly, the number of Internet retail businesses that are like multi-billion dollar businesses is really, really, really small. But maybe there is a point where, like, you're so big that even though you only have distribution centers in 12 states, you're actually national. And at that point, you ought to be treated like a national. But we would say that businesses that are $1 million or $10 million, you know, $10 million business, as big as one drugstore, we would honestly wonder, is it time to treat that business as if they were national or not? But, you know, that's why we debate about how big a small business is.
Thank you.
direct answer to your question, Jerry's going to hand this to you. This is the list of the minimum implications that Streets Implementation Coalition has talked about. And they're the same ones that Streamline has pushed for so hard, so many years. And I'll point you to just one of the fourth one on there, a single set of definitions for taxable items and definitions of things like sales price. You would think that a granola bar that's going to be called candy in California shouldn't be food in Kentucky. That's the aspiration. Emma and I and Bill and Goldberg on the Streamline for 10 years. The same tax base across the country. The state can decide whether to tax it, but we should have the same definitions. We should have the same definition of what is sales price. Is sales price what you paid, or is it the sticker price? Well, states would like to have different standard definitions for items and different interpretations. That is an example of a standard minimum simplification that isn't even required under the bill that you're being asked to swallow today. Because each state is allowed to have their own definitions up and down the line. So I'd encourage you, if you do want to pivot off a series of items, take a look at this list, because there is no state's rights in this bill. In this bill, a state gets to impose its tax collection on businesses in your district, and you have no right to protect your businesses and citizens from that out-of-state tax collector. That's the state's rights concern that argues against this bill. So it's H.R. 684 and S.336. They're both called, ironically, the Marketplace Fairness Act. You can learn about it at netchoice.org or at truesimplification.org.